At the time of the filming of Twin Peaks, I owned the Double R Diner, which was Marti Cafe. And when they came and asked about using the restaurant, I said, yes, you can. It was in February of 1989. And so the location scout left, and she came back in about a week and said, oh, yes, David Lynch wants to use it. And so we'll be back in a few weeks. And I said, well, we were fixing to do some remodeling. And she said, oh, no, don't change anything. We want it just as it is. So they were back in 2 weeks, and they set up and did all-day shooting one day, and I had the trailers for this crew, this actor's trailers, and the makeup crew, and everything parked in behind the restaurant. And so they spent that day in there filming, and then the next day they filmed in the afternoon. And then the third day, they started about 3:30 and worked until 2:30 in the morning. And when I left that night, I finally decided at 10 o'clock I was going to leave and go home. I was tired. So they said, well, can we eat pie? And I said, oh, sure, just mark it down. So the next day, I came back, and there was 17 marks on a piece of paper. They had eaten 17 pieces of pie. It was okay with me. I just billed them for them. But during the office was across the street from us, up in the second floor of the building. And so during the time they were there, they would send over and get a banana pie, and they got chocolate peanut butter occasionally. But I don't ever remember them getting cherry pie. So, I mean, we had no idea that the pie was in the film. And at that time, I had Garnet Cross, who was about 72, making the pies. And she had made pies for me for many years. And so she'd make 6 to 10 a day. And so, but after that, so that was okay. They got through the filming. They were in one location about 5 weeks around the Snoqualmie Valley and over on Bainbridge Island. And so then that was April of the following year before it was on TV. So in all this time, we were just, you know, wondering what happened to that movie crew. So when it came out in April and they were eating the cherry pie and the damn fine coffee, we were just amazed. But it hit the news media, and we were in the news then. So from that time on, every week people were calling, wanting to come out and have pies, buy whole pies, and they just invaded us with it. So every weekend especially, we were really busy. So yeah, I ended up hiring another lady to come and help make pies, because Garnet could not keep up with the demand. So it finally got to the point that we couldn't sell any whole pies, and they would come in and make the pies in the morning, and we would start selling at 11 o'clock a.m. and sell until we ran out. And if people came in at 3 or 4 o'clock and we were out, they would really get upset, some of them. Well, we came here just for pie and coffee, and I'm so sorry, you know, but we don't know what the demand is going to be. And during the summer, of course, it was real busy. And then when the second season started in September, it was just wild. We had people waiting for 20 minutes to come in to get pie and coffee. I'd never seen anything like it. And I had the restaurant for, 15 years then. And, I mean, it was just amazing. And so we didn't sell any whole pies at that time, unless it was somebody like the Chicago radio station that wanted a whole pie, and a doctor in Kentucky that wanted a whole pie. And so we shipped out a few whole pies.
Well, so you shipped them?
We shipped a few whole pies. In fact, there was one designer in New York that ordered pies for their opening, showing up at Fashions. And we shipped, I think, 10 or 12 pies to them. And they didn't get there in real good shape, but they said they ate them anyway. But, you know, it was just unbelievable, the things that happened. I would have never imagined in a million years that something like that would happen. And so one time, McLaughlin's grandmother was in the restaurant, and she wanted me to bring the cherry pies over to that house. So we took off and drove to Yakima with, I think, 3 pies or something. And he was going to be there on the weekend for a benefit golf tournament, and they were going to surprise him with these Marti cherry pies. And they came back later and said, he said, I don't ever want another cherry pie. I ate so many when that TV show was being filmed that it was, he was tired of them. He probably still hasn't eaten one. But you know, they did the filming of the pilot film there, and then they went back to L.A. and produced a studio where they had all the sets in it. So the most of the shows were done in L.A. except for some clips, film clips that they took out of the original filming. So, but it's really been an experience.
They came back as Carson shot Firewalk with
they
Me.
They came back.
Well, you were still on it.
Yes, I still had it when they shot Firewalk with Me, and that time I got to walk around the building with David. Early morning he came and we walked around and just chatted. Really nice person. And of course all the time they were filming during the daytime I'd stay out and watch all that they were doing. And he was so hands-on with the actors and actresses. If they didn't get it right the first time, he would go over and show them how he wanted it done. I mean, I never heard him raise his voice or anything, and I've heard of actors getting really irate on the sets, but he was not that way at all. He was just a very calm, easygoing person. So I got to meet a lot of the actors and actresses when they were making Firewalk with Me, and that was really neat. We could stand around and have conversations just like anybody else. They're just normal people. They just got lucky and made a good film. And the first day that they filmed, of course, my help all wanted to be in there, and so I just made out a schedule. You can come for this 2 hours, you can come for this 2 hours.
Right.
So each person had a 2-hour slot that they could come in and be there and be quiet in the back while they were filming. So that worked out that everybody got to see some of it. Of course, I stayed there all day. And,
you did.
Yeah.
Now, did your local regulars get a little upset about all that?
Yes, they did a little bit. Not so much that we were closed those days, but it took up a lot of parking space that nobody else's business could get any customers, they thought. But, you know, that was who was bringing the money into town, was people coming in, and I'm sure they drifted down the street and did some more shopping. And but we did get our fair share of business during those first 2 years.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
It's surprising, but I know it has been on TV this year, and I feed firemen up at the Washington State Fire Training Academy, and they have been talking to me. Every time I bring pie up, they said, oh, are these the Twin Peak pies? And they are really interested into the fact that the festival was here, and they said, well, it's on TV. And so I think just the fact that it is continuing to be shown, and the newer generation is getting into it, because that's what it is. The ones that weren't even old enough to look at it when it was first out, watching it now. So it's a whole different, well, of course, the same people come here, some of the same people, but there are a lot of new people too. So it's a compliment to the area, maybe, and also to the movie. Yeah, this is my role, to bring the pies and be sure they have that part of it, because that was what our role at the restaurant was, and we got so many calls for people that wanted to ask questions and talk about it. So we just maintained doing the same thing, and the lady that made the pies for today was there when I had the restaurant, and still making them.
Thank you. 2 p.m., the 16th of August, 1977. Ginger went to the bathroom to check if Elvis was okay.
Elvis, one weekend, he kept saying, we got to go do something this weekend. He said, let's go to Vegas. Well, I've never been to Vegas, and a lot of the other guys never been to Vegas. So he said, okay, let's go. So we all jumped in the car. We didn't fly. We all jumped in the car, and we took off. We got there like about, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. And at that time, the road we were coming down, you drive in, and you could see the lights of all Las Vegas. Now, it's not as big as it is today, but at that time, you could see the Strip. It was very prominent. It was very exciting. We drove down. He showed us, you know, the Sands Hotel, the Sahara, all the big hotels. And we went to the Sahara Hotel. We went there for a week, and we just partied. I mean, all night, up all night. And some of the guys were drinkers. Elvis wasn't a drinker, neither was I. And all the hotels at that time, they all had big stars. All the big stars in all the showrooms, and every hotel had a chorus line of ladies. So naturally, we would see all these shows, and then we wanted to meet the girls. So we stay around the hotel and invite them all out to have a drink in the lounge, and we'd meet them. We'd go see different acts. Jackie Wilson, Fats Domino was playing there, famous acts that Elvis loved. And we'd go sit and watch their shows in the evening. And we'd be up till 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. The sun would rise, and we'd go right to sleep. Get away from the sun. We didn't want to see the sun. And we just did this for a week, 10 days. Elvis said, okay, we got to get out of here. We got to go back to L.A. And we get in the car, start driving. I said, Elvis, what? Why do we have to go back now? He said, well, I don't know. I just thought we'd been here too long. Ah, let's go back. We turn around and go right back. We stay 2-3 weeks at a time and just party. And one time, I forget, we were going so hard that Elvis started getting a bloody nose. And we went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you guys need to get some rest. His resistance was getting down, and he kept getting a bloody nose, so we had to rest for a couple days. With his records no longer selling, Elvis's only income came from these tours. And being 40 plus, he no longer had a huge following. He was teetering on the brink of financial meltdown. Touring paid the bills for now, but 50% of the income went to Tom Parker. The Colonel, too, was facing bankruptcy.
Colonel Parker probably was one of the most degenerate gamblers I've ever known in my life. In Nevada, they used to say his money's not worth anything. He played roulette and would put chips on every number. He would play craps and bet the horn, the center.
Three, you know, we all have our little idiosyncrasies.
That was
his gambling.
August 1977.
And I loved him to death, but he didn't play the game
Elvis
like you have to play it to win.
Yet another back-breaking,
I mean, he would go
tour
through with those on roulette, and he would drop 5 or 6 chips there, 2 on that one, 10 or 12 on this one, and that's whatever fell out of his hand.
Yeah.
That's what he'd do. And when he hit, yeah, he didn't really win.
You got
could
wealth
have more
and
bet than what it was.
But he thought he did.
They really,
yeah,
got
coming. I mean, listen,
and
one night in between shows.
Fast and hard.
This was in 70.
And you.
And we were at the crap table.
What you have to do is on a continual basis weed him out.
Well, I said, you know, I said, I've got to go upstairs.
You're so charismatic that he would draw.
I'll get you up there on time. I said, okay.
They were like moths flying around
in a period of an hour and a half, he lost over $1.25 million.
We found the pharmacy that dispensed the drugs and the doctor who prescribed them.
You prescribed to Elvis Presley, and the prescriptions are all signed by you. Over 5,000 Schedule II narcotics and or amphetamines. That comes out to something like 25 per day.
I don't believe that.
Although the doctor's medical license was temporarily suspended, a jury acquitted him of criminally overprescribing addictive drugs.
Well, I hear rumors flying around. I got sick in the hospital. Well, I was, you know, in this day and time, you can't even get sick. You are strung out. Oh, by God, I'll tell you something, friend. I have never been strung out in my life, except on music. When I got sick here in the hotel, I got sick here that one night. I had 102 temperature. They wouldn't let me perform. From three different sources, I heard I was strung out on heroin. I swear to God, hotel employees, Jack, bellboys, freaks that carry your luggage up to the room, people working around, you know, talking, maids. And I was sick. I was, you know, I was getting, had a doctor, had the flu, and I got over one day. Was I? But all across this town, I was strung out. So I told him earlier, and don't you get offended, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking to somebody else. If I find or hear the individual that has said that about me, I'm going to break your goddamn neck, you son of a bitch. That is dangerous. That is damaging to myself, to my little daughter, to my father, to my friends, my doctor, to everybody in my relationship with you, my relationship with up here on the stage. It is dangerous. I will pull your goddamn tongue out by the roots. Thank you very much. Come on. Let me get out of this mood.
The clearest indication we have to the extent of the use of drugs by Elvis Presley is what was discovered in his system at the time of his death. At the time of his death in 1977, there were a total of traces of 14 drugs in his system, 10 of which were present in significant quantities. This basically meaning that he had used them within a day or two of his death, and the body was not able to metabolize them, so therefore that is what existed at the time of autopsy. This list is as follows. He was at one point or another taking codeine, which is prescribed as a cough syrup. Morphine, which that could be due to metabolization of the codeine. These two really serious opioids were taken in the context of a massive cocktail of benzodiazepine-type and barbiturate-type drugs. These drugs are incredibly dangerous. And many of the drugs that Elvis Presley was taking are no longer even manufactured in most societies. So, he was taking diazepam, which is still prescribed and used. This is known as Valium. Valium is a long-acting benzodiazepam that's used to treat anxiety and insomnia. One of the more concerning drugs he was taking is the drug that I would term, quite rightly, the rock star killer, methaqualone, or Quaaludes, which is the brand name for that drug, and the one most encountered by people in the 1970s and 1980s. This is a drug so dangerous that it is no longer being used by physicians in general in any sort of form or treatment for anything. One of the more concerning drugs he was taking is the drug that I would term, quite rightly, the rock star killer, methaqualone, or Quaaludes, which is the brand name for that drug, and the one most encountered by people in the 1970s and 1980s.
Yeah. tonight. They can all sleep soundly, and everything is alright.
Thank you. time of the day where we must say goodbye. I really do appreciate y'all sticking in there and joining us on Disaster Island's first ever Halloween special. Right here on RadioGlencia.fm in the heart of the Mission District in San Francisco, California. So we heard The Toys with Monster Hash. We heard Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs with Little Red Riding Hood. We heard Total Immortal from AFI. Frankenstein from the New York Dolls. We heard Oingo Boingo with Private Life. We heard some old Marilyn Manson. Oldish for the cover. Sweet Dreams by the Ozzy. Some old White Zombie, like 1985 type of White Zombie, with Tales from the Scarecrow Man. Off of the Downward Spiral, we heard the March of the Pigs from Nine Inch Nails. We heard The Creature Stole My Surfboard from Dead Ovi. We heard from Rob Zombie and the Ghastly Ones, Halloween, She's So Mean. Heard One Has to Kill from Memphis Murderman. Heard The Blob from the Groovy Ghoulies. And we just heard some New Misfits. Dare I say New Misfits with Nightmare on Elm Street. Don't go anywhere, y'all. We got Happy Horseshoe with Fiat Chase coming up next. Followed by Bughouse Square with Sean. And, of course, John Hell's live bootleg bonanza. Should be a treat, I guarantee it. I do appreciate y'all being here. Happy Halloween to everyone. Everyone be safe. Enjoy the holiday. Also, shout out to Lily's Candy Shop. It's a new local business here in San Francisco on 25th and Valencia, practically, right next to Clooney's Bar. Get your all.